is the End User, episode 123 for Tuesday, February 12th, using the surface of a surface. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. Chris, we don't have a whole lot of big news this week, but we do have a whole lot of apps. We've got iOS apps, we've got Windows Phone 8 apps, we've got Windows apps, we've got Mac apps, we've got web apps, we've got Google Play apps. It's a whole lot of apps, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think there were two things compounding this week that we had a short week because we delayed our podcast last week, and then the news has just been kind of quiet. You know, we haven't had any kind of releases, and we try not to talk about rumors or tech industry drama because that's boring. We show us the technology. And so it's been a little quiet, but yeah, you're right. We've been exploring our options on the platforms that we're using.
We also try to avoid talking about Kim.com, about patent disputes, about Silicon Valley gossip.
There are much more people, or there are more people that are more qualified to talk about that kind of stuff than us. Just show me the technology. That's the way I look at it.
Right. I would hate to be the person who is more qualified to talk about Kim.com.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. That would be kind of boring.
Anyway, so our top story this week was an emergency flash update for Windows and Mac. Adobe issued it because, people were getting hacked through their flash. And everybody has flash, so now there's an update. Go get it. This has been a public service announcement by the end user.
So how long until we can actually not use Flash? I mean, I know I don't have it. Well, I have it installed, I guess, because it comes with Chrome.
Right.
But I haven't installed it for Internet Explorer like I used to in a long time now. How long before we can actually just not use Flash anymore?
Good question.
I mean, it's got to be sometime soon that most people right now probably don't need Flash, right?
No, I think most people definitely need Flash right now.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing. Most of the major sites that, like YouTube, that use Flash have an HTML5 option now, don't they? I mean, I know there are still a lot of cases in which you need it, but for the most part, you're covered.
I just think most people are going to have one or two of those cases where it's something that they want or need and would be pretty sad without it. But anybody who is getting by with just an iPhone or an iPad or a Chromebook, or does Chromebook do Flash? I don't remember. Maybe it does.
I think they do.
Right.
Because bundled with Flash.
Right. So, but if you have a Windows Surface RT, still no Flash. So if you're getting by without a full-fledged computer, you're getting by without Flash. And I think when Adobe and developers realize that more and more people are going to start doing this, you know, getting by with just a smartphone or a smartphone and a tablet or, you know, maybe a Surface or, I don't know, maybe a Chromebook, which I'm sure can run Flash, but probably doesn't like it very much. When the developers start to realize that's the case, that people are not buying, you know, full PCs anymore, then that's when we're going to be able to start getting by without it.
Or at least only developers are buying full PCs anymore, something like that.
Well, as long as the developers are all buying full PCs, they're going to keep making Flash.
and people who need Photoshop and stuff like that, they're coming along slowly, I guess. But yeah, Flash has presented itself as a major vector for all kinds of malware, as in addition to just being unpleasant. So I'm looking forward to the day when I can just skip it.
Me too. I skip it most of the time because I have Flash installed, but then I have a Flash blocker that prevents it from playing unless I say it's okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think it's been our tip of the week at some point in the past, probably right after I installed it.
It has to have been. All right, well, let's move on to our second news story here. What's going on with CBS and Amazon?
Right. Well, I don't know if you watch any CBS shows, Chris. I don't because I don't have any live TV, and that's basically the only way you can watch shows on CBS. You can buy back episodes on DVD or even on iTunes, but most of their shows just have not been available online, whether it's Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu Plus. Any of these things, just it wasn't an option. But they are starting a new show based on a Stephen King novel called Under the Dome, and they've announced that they will have the episodes available for free on Amazon Prime during the original air of the show, or probably, you know, immediately afterwards.
Yeah, that's cool.
Four-day lag. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
I feel like we're seeing some notion of these companies starting to get their content out there on the internet in a way that may or may not make sense, and this is but one step for one company in the
CBS
right
direction. CBS is the last holdout. I mean, they're the only major network, broadcast or cable, that just steadfastly refuses to put their shows online. And so now they're going to start it 4 days after air with this one show that probably won't make it to a second season.
Right. Little steps, Taylor. Little steps in the right direction will go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're making moves, right? This is the last straggler of the industry starting to put their stuff online. So baby steps. I'm happy.
Yeah, definitely so. And I still consume a fair bit of live content, albeit not live. I use Windows Media Center, as I've mentioned in the past, to record TV over the air. And if I don't have to record that TV over the air, then I will be a much happier person. Now, I'm not sure how I'm going to get at this Amazon content on my TV, but at least through Media Center, as it is, I guess there is a plugin. There's a plugin that's recently come out that I haven't given a shot yet. Maybe it's time to look at that for me.
Maybe. There's nothing for Amazon Prime on Apple TV, unless you jailbreak your Apple TV. And I don't have Amazon Prime anyway, so I will not be watching this new show.
Yeah, see,
don't have the capability.
I've got Amazon Prime, but it's an extension of my old student Amazon Prime, which doesn't include the video part. So I'm going to have to see if this works for me or not. I don't think it will.
Right. Well, it won't work for me.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who have Prime because it is a pretty good deal and can have access to this now. So for all of you guys.
You don't have to watch CBS Live anymore. Aren't you so excited?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, with that, let's move on to our next story and turn on the afterburners. Are you ready? Strap yourself in.
Hang on. I got to.
Okay.
Okay. I'm strapped in.
Is that the sound your seatbelt makes?
No, that was my gun, but I was also checking the seatbelt at the same time.
Oh, okay, good deal. So the Nexus 4 wireless charging station is available now for $59.99, and it's this little orb-like device that you can rest your phone against to charge it pseudo-wirelessly. So you've got a wire that goes to the charging station, and then you can rest your phone on that with a magnet. So.
Yeah,
cool
it looks
stuff.
Like the old Palm Pre wireless charger, and it's great news for anybody with a Nexus 4, by which I mean no one.
Yeah, well, we did this experiment a couple weeks ago. If you have a Nexus 4, send us a tweet or an email, and we'll see if anyone responds.
Great news if you are a Spotify Premium subscriber and you have a Windows 8 phone. There's an app now. It only works for Premium subscribers. But you can get Spotify on your Windows phone now.
Yeah, I specifically went into the marketplace with my Windows Phone 8 device and tried to log into it just to be sure that it was only for premium subscribers, and that is indeed the case. So you'll have to get a subscription to use this. But that is a pretty big app to hit the marketplace, and I'm really glad to see it.
One thing you won't have to pay anything for is the newest version of LibreOffice 4.0. It's a major upgrade. They focused on making it much leaner and faster, and they added a ton of new features like collaboration and text comments, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And if you don't use Google Docs or Microsoft Office or iWork exclusively, then you should definitely have a copy of LibreOffice 4.0 because it is full-featured and free.
Yeah, it is pretty nice.
And finally, well, not finally, but next, Texas Instruments has released a graphing calculator app for the iPad. There are other graphing calculators out there as apps, but everybody really wanted, you know, the old school TI-89 graphing calculator app in an iPad version, and it took them a very long time, but now it is available, and it cost $30.
Wow.
It's cheaper than a calculator.
I guess that's cheaper than a dedicated calculator. And the interface of a touchscreen for a calculator is just fantastic. Not necessarily for inputting numbers, but for manipulating graphs and stuff like that. A touchscreen is really a great thing to have.
True. In other iOS news, Apple has released another update to iOS 6.1.1 for iPhone 4S users who were having problems with battery life and data. So if you have an iPhone 4S, go and grab the latest update. The latest version of the iOS jailbreak, available for all iOS devices now running iOS 6, is being called the most popular ever after it's been downloaded over 7 million times in under a week. I think this is probably just because so many of the newest iOS devices haven't had proper jailbreaks up until this past week, and so everybody who was dying to jailbreak now can.
Yeah, so the earlier versions of iOS, they had a jailbreak, but it was really inconvenient to do so. Is that right?
It was tethered, which means that every time you turn your phone completely off, you have to hook it back up to your computer and jailbreak it again.
Yeah, that's no fun. So for those freedom-loving Cydia-using users out there, this is definitely a good thing for you guys.
And there are apparently a lot of them, because 7 million in under a week.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. So PayPal is working to redesign its site, and it's much needed. PayPal has become a mess over the years, and they've posted some screenshots of what they're trying to accomplish, and some beta details and all kinds of stuff. So we've got a link in the show notes. Head over there, and you can have a look. I can't wait till they actually roll this out.
And in other end user archives news, the Hopper with Slingbox technology from Dish, which we mentioned as part of our coverage of CES 2013. It was a controversial winner of the CES Best in Show Awards, and it's now available, you know, if you either have Dish or want to sign up for Dish. Otherwise, you're out of luck. Sorry.
Yeah, so you can head to the Dish website and actually purchase this thing now. So it's good to see.
Totally. All right. Should we turn off our afterburners?
Please do. You can put your gun away, Mr. Marr, and unstrap your seatbelt, and we'll get into the end user stories. And you're leading up front with a discontent.
Yeah, I am having some trouble with Google Reader, which is like half of my life, so it's pretty important. Many other people have been having problems with Google Reader. Although not everybody, it is apparently having some minor glitches that are cascading and expanding to more and more users. Ever since Saturday or Sunday, or even earlier for a few people, more and more people have been complaining that you can't mark things as read, you can't mark them as unread, you don't know what's old, what's new. Some people have entire feeds missing. Fortunately, I was not that unlucky, but it's been very difficult to use Google Reader. And TechCrunch is just going to go ahead and call this the Google Reader apocalypse.
Yeah, that sounds like TechCrunch. I actually haven't noticed this. All my feeds, although I'm not as particular a user of Google Reader as you are. I more or less use it as a magazine, not as something, not as an inbox like you do, right?
Well, I don't use it as a magazine because it's not a magazine.
No, I just go there and I cruise around and read things. And so maybe things are missing, and I don't think I would have noticed.
Yeah. By the way, if you thought using third-party news reading apps with your Google Reader account would get you off the hook, sorry, you are out of luck. And they have not said when they're going to fix this yet, although they have said that they are working on it.
And they say that, or at least according to Google, they said that the issue has been resolved currently. So I wonder if you're back to normal or not.
Ah, I guess they just posted that right before we started the show.
That's right. Nice. Yeah, I think, 30 minutes before we started the show?
Right. Well, I will find out after the show, and then I'll tweet about it.
Yeah, so they specifically made it very difficult for you to compile the show notes for tonight. That I think that was their goal here.
That makes sense, I guess. So they just want me to hate them.
Yeah. In fact, I saw some on the website. They specifically mentioned the end user and told us that they wanted to make it difficult for us. So sorry about that.
Sergey Brin was mad because I challenged his Angry Birds score.
All right, so let's get into our second the end user story. This one's also from you, and this is a Chrome extension pick, I suppose. What do you got?
Yeah, I had stopped using Chrome for a long time because I just have way too many tabs open and not enough memory on my computer. Chrome eats up memory more than any other web browser, on a Mac at least, and I just had to stop using it. But now there is this new extension that will automatically manage all of your background tabs and kill their processes and free up that memory for other tabs or apps. So I used Chrome in a meaningful way for the first time in like a year because of this app. So nice. I thought it's pretty cool. It's great not only if you are low on memory, it would be useful if your computer is struggling, you know, under the weight of all the different programs you have open, or if you are running on battery and you just want to try to get, you know, more life out of your charge.
Yeah, Chrome is a bit of a hog. I really like the way it functions, though, so I've continued to use it where you might have given up. Currently, I have a virtual machine running, and I'm looking at my memory usage, and Google Chrome is using more memory than an entire Linux virtual machine.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
At least with all my tabs for the show notes open, so that's kind of wild. So yeah, this seems like a pretty handy extension.
I thought so. I mean, I had no idea what Chrome was up to for a long time. Now I do.
Yeah, and Firefox, by the way, has become the same way. Whenever I use Firefox, it really bloats up the memory as well. Maybe I should
Firefox
go to Opera.
Has always been historically bad. I mean, for a long time, I was just between Chrome and Firefox for who was using more memory.
Yeah, and it probably changes whenever they release an update as well. So maybe you should move to Opera, become the 1%.
I have tried moving to Opera, and every time they release a major update, I try it, and then I go right back to Safari.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I do the same thing, but with Chrome. So I've got Opera and Firefox and Chrome and Internet Explorer installed here, and every time I see that Opera is up to something, I go check it out for a minute or two, and then for some reason I always find myself running back to Chrome, and I don't really know why.
I notice you do not give Safari the same courtesy.
Yeah, they have Safari for Windows. I don't have that installed, I'm sorry to say.
It's current. It's not like Microsoft's last version of Internet Explorer for Mac,
yeah,
which is still on 6.
6, right? Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if you can even get it anymore. I doubt it would run on Snow or Mountain Lion.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that it would. And I wouldn't imagine that you would want to use it either.
No. I wouldn't imagine so either. Well, if that's all we have to say about our personal browsing habits, I will move on to my green tech story of the week, which came from Chris. Thank you, Chris.
Yes, I can pitch in on the green tech story of the week once in a while.
Good job. Well, this one comes from California, the state of the already existing electric charging power grid. You know, they have charging stations all over the state. They tried to space them out so that one could theoretically drive from one end of the state to the other on any currently available electric car. And UPS is going to start taking advantage of that. They have just ordered 100 electric delivery trucks, and they're going to start delivering packages. This is in addition to several other forms of alternative fuel vehicles that they have, including they have diesel hybrids. They have biofuel or biodiesel trucks. They have flywheel-powered regenerative braking systems. And I think they have a couple of natural gas trucks. But of all of those options, electric vehicles are the most efficient and cheapest to operate, have the fewest emissions. And if you live in Bakersfield, Fresno, Sacramento, or San Bernardino, or a couple of other small cities, you might get a package delivered from an electric UPS truck.
The picture in the article that we're looking at here, the UPS truck actually looks like futuristic. It's all bubbly. It's kind of weird looking. Kind of like how the Prius is also kind of future looking for some reason.
They have a completely different powertrain. You don't have to put the engine in the same place, so you can make a bigger windshield. You can put vents in different places, and this appears to be a German electric UPS truck, the picture anyway.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. Maybe they just got that from a stock photo somewhere or something.
I guess they did, but it is UPS.
Yeah, I wonder if the Germans are already using this, and right. We're just behind on the times.
Well, the main thing that I'm excited about is just more exposure for this kind of technology. Everybody recognizes a UPS truck, and most people see them every so often. So to have some of these really obviously different and more eco-friendly UPS trucks around is pretty exciting. Because those flywheel trucks and those biodiesel trucks, I mean, they basically look identical to the regular ones.
Yeah, I think once you start getting companies that have really big deployments of vehicles to get on this kind of stuff, I feel like that's a huge win. I mean, you know, one person buying a Prius makes, a small difference. But a company that controls a fleet of vehicles, they have the ability to make a huge difference. And I wonder if this will help out a little with dirty emissions and the like.
Right. Apparently, UPS already has electric vehicles in New York City, as well as Europe, which we mentioned because clearly they have German UPS electric trucks.
Yeah, cool. So on to California, and hopefully we'll see this soon over here on the East Coast.
Outside of New York City.
Right, outside of New York.
Or you could just go to New York.
Yeah, I suppose that's also an option. If I really wanted to see one, I could travel up to New York.
You could. I did. No, not really. But I saw one.
All right, well, let's get into our tip and our app pick of the week. You've got a good tip for us. What's going on?
All right. Now, do you ever find a new blog and you get really excited about it and, you just have to read like half their catalog and you just go through, blog page by blog page and just keep reading articles? I don't know. This happens to me every once in a while, maybe a few times a year. Chris, ever happened to you?
Yeah, it happens occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, you found a blog and you're like, why didn't I know about this before? Let's see what it's been doing, before I started reading it. Now, I think it's a pain in the butt, really, to have to go through each page and click page by page. Now, there is this new web app called eBook Glue. It takes a blog, it stitches the whole thing together, puts it into an eBook, and then you load it into wherever you read eBooks.
Wow, that's pretty neat. Have you tried this with something yet?
No, I haven't tried it yet. I just discovered it. Nice. But it seems pretty cool.
Okay, I'm going to try it with the digitalmediazone.com right now.
Sweet.
And I'll be reading the archives of our own site, although I guess I won't be able to get at the podcast, right?
Right.
Interesting. So that's really neat. I know some blogs out there have taken to publishing their own ebook with just past content as a alternate method of monetizing things.
So, yeah, that's true. I've seen a few of those, but it was always blogs that I already read, and so I didn't need to get the ebook.
Yeah, but this seems a little questionable to scrape the entire blog for its content, isn't it?
Well, I would assume you get ads and all. I mean, it depends on the implementation of the blog, but
yeah, I guess that's true.
People are putting this stuff online for free anyway, usually under a relatively liberal license. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah, I suppose so. It depends upon the blog. I wouldn't have any problem with it for my personal blog, but Very interesting. We'll see if this sticks around, I guess.
Now, Lifehacker, who posted this, noted that it won't work for a lot of blogs. For example, Lifehacker, who they only publish the summaries of their story or the first few sentences in their RSS feed, because it has to take the RSS and use that to turn it into a blog. So I guess that's how blogs can protect themselves against being glued.
Ah, okay. That makes a little more sense. And by the way, I've always found it frustrating that all of the Gawker sites like Lifehacker do that, because it means I can't really use my feed reader. But yeah, so neat. So
Chris, that is a tip for another week.
Yeah, so this seems like a great option for that.
I think so. I'm looking forward to using it.
All right, and you sir, are on fire because you also have our app pick of the week, and I really like this one.
Right. Now, this is an Android app, and you might be saying, what? Taylor, Android? I don't even have an Android phone. You're right, but I felt bad for you Android users because you didn't have that thing from that iPhone commercial where you're dreaming and you're playing table tennis against the Williams sisters, and you didn't want to be woken up. Now there is an app for Android called Silence that lets you do that iPhone thing that you can set a do not disturb toggle, and it'll adjust your sound and wireless settings based on triggers that you can put into Google Calendar.
Right. So this is fantastic. I mean, you just load up this app and you add some events to your calendar and it will handle what to do upon those events. And, you know, I've seen apps like Tasker that do something similar, but this seems like a better solution that is a little easier to use than Tasker. So, and some apps like Tasker, you know, we've talked about If This Then That before too, and that seems like another good option, but this seems like a great app that gives Android a feature that iOS has, and that's definitely a plus.
Right. Now, the pro version of this app costs $2. There is a free version, but it wakes you up with a loud alarm every 4 a.m. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't do that. It just has ads.
Okay. That would be hilarious, by the way. People would be so angry, though. It's not worth it. It's not worth the joke.
They would not pay the $2 for a developer who did that to them.
They should make another version of the app and call it, so they've got Silence Pro or whatever they call it, and Silence Free, and Silence Prank. And the prank version does exactly what you just said. I feel like that would be a that would be a good version to have.
I would buy a version called Silence Fools.
Now that would be a more difficult app to write, I do imagine.
It might be. But it's a pretty simple app to start off.
All right, and lastly, we have our last story of the week. We have a little bit of a wacky story. There's a Kickstarter startup. They are on Kickstarter, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so they've developed this device that you can put a cold drink or a hot drink onto this little puck, and it will actually generate a little bit of energy off of the difference in temperature between the cold or hot drink and the pad that it's sitting on. And it'll generate a little energy for your iPhone in this example.
Yeah, it's just got a USB port on the pad. It's essentially a coaster. It looks like it's about maybe 3/4 inch thick, and it's roughly coaster sized. It's got a USB port on the side. And the way it works is a thing called a Stirling engine, which has been around for a while. It's just a simple engine with no moving parts that takes the difference between two surfaces of differing temperatures, and the difference in temperature between the two provides the power. So I would imagine to get enough power to charge a phone off of here, you'd have to have a fairly cold drink in a warm room or a warm drink in a cold room. You know,
yeah, like, I'd have to imagine that. So to get anything useful out of this, you would have to spend a lot of energy up front by generating something that is very hot to get any kind of electricity out of this. Although I guess you will get a little trickle, right?
Yeah, I mean, by definition, you will get a trickle out of any difference in energy between the two surfaces, which would happen in most situations. But the whole point is that if you are drinking a drink with ice in it or some kind of hot tea or coffee, you've already expended all that energy to make your drink hot or cold. And now you're just taking advantage of the difference between room temperature and drink temperature.
Right. That part kind of makes sense. So if you're drinking tea or I think they say a cold lager in the blog post that we're talking about. So, yeah,
I bet you could get creative with this thing, too. I mean, all you need to do is find anything that's hot or cold.
I suppose so. You could. Well, what else would you use with this if this were in production?
You could probably stick it on your laptop itself. That thing heats up pretty good.
Yeah, you could put it on your Surface Pro, right?
I know Mutt does. Does the Surface have hot surfaces?
Well, it's not really that bad, but according
using
to the reviews...
Using the Surface as a surface.
According to the reviews, it does, you know, emit some heat, although it doesn't seem to be too terribly bad.
Right. Well, even a phone can do that under the right conditions.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. All right, so that is our last story, and with that, I think we will get out of here. So, Taylor, if someone were to try to give you 140 characters of text instantly across the internet, how would they go about doing this?
They could just ping me like 35 times.
And do you have an IP address that can be pinged or something like this?
Well, I guess I would rather not give out my IP address on the air, right? That wouldn't necessarily be the smartest thing. I guess maybe my Twitter account would be better. I'm at TaylorPhone on Twitter. That's the best IP address that I can give.
Yeah, that's the best way to resolve something to Taylor. That is 140 characters. And if you'd like to resolve something to me through the medium that is Twitter, I am at Chris Hale Barnes. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts, so you can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. If you'd like, you can send us some feedback. We are theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, and we will read your email on the show if you do. Or you can send us a tweet. We are at theenduser. Of course, you can join us live as we record the show every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.